picture this. It's a summer afternoon, mid-August, and you're at a high-elevation airport. Maybe you've flown there before, maybe you know the runway, you know the terrain, you know the airplane, you finish your run-up, line up, push the throttle to the stop, and the airplane doesn't respond the way you know it should. The acceleration feels wrong. The airspeed needle moves, but slower than it has any right to. You're eating runway, you rotate, the airplane lifts off, but it doesn't climb. The ridgeline is out there in the distance, and you're watching your altitude gain and doing silent math you should have done an hour ago on the ground. That scenario plays out every summer across the American West, and in the Southeast, and anywhere temperatures climb and elevation is anything above sea level. Sometimes it ends fine, sometimes it ends in an NTSB report. And almost every time the cause is two words, density altitude. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today, we're building your density altitude understanding from the ground up, because I think a lot of pilots understand this concept just well enough to pass a written test and not quite well enough to protect themselves on a hot summer afternoon at a mountain strip. Before we get into it, quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the flying journey. First solo, private certificate, instrument rating, commercial. These are the milestones that actually mean something. aviationsoul.com. Let's start with the definition, and I want you to actually feel what this means rather than just memorize words. Your airplane's performance depends on air density. The more air molecules packed into a given volume, the better your engine breathes, the harder your propeller can bite, the more lift your wings can generate at a given speed. Density altitude is the altitude at which the air is behaving, not where you physically are, but where the physics place you in terms of performance. The engineers who designed your airplane, who ran the test programs and produced all those numbers in the pilot's operating handbook, they use something called the standard atmosphere as their reference. Standard sea level is 59 degrees Fahrenheit, 15 degrees Celsius, with a barometric pressure of 29.92 inches of mercury. Temperature decreases predictably with altitude. That's the world the handbook assumes. When you deviate from that baseline, performance changes, and the biggest deviation most general aviation pilots encounter is high temperature combined with high elevation in summer. Here's the math you can run in your head. Your pressure altitude is what your altimeter reads when you set the Kalsman window to 29.92. That's your starting point. Standard temperature at a given altitude is 15 degrees Celsius minus 2 degrees for every 1,000 feet of altitude. So at 5,000 feet elevation, standard temperature is approximately 5 degrees Celsius. At 10,000, it's around minus 5. Now suppose you're at a 5,000-foot airport on a hot August afternoon, and the temperature is 35 degrees Celsius. You're 30 degrees above standard for that altitude. Multiply that 30 degrees by roughly 120 feet, which is the rule of thumb for density altitude gain per degree above standard, and you get 3,600 additional feet. Add that to your 5,000-foot pressure altitude, and your density altitude is approximately 8,600 feet. You're on the ground at 5,000 feet. Your airplane is performing as if it's at 8,600. Now, let's talk about what that actually costs you. Your engine, if it's naturally aspirated, which covers the vast majority of training aircraft, and a huge number of general aviation singles, loses roughly 3% of its rated horsepower for every 1,000 feet of density altitude. At 8,600 feet density altitude, you might be down 25% from what the engine is rated for. When you push the throttle to the stop, you're getting full throttle of the available air. That's not the same thing as full power. It's the most power the engine can make in conditions that are working against it. This is worth pausing on for a second, because the throttle feels the same. The engine sounds similar. The RPM might look close to normal. But the power output is significantly reduced, and your airplane's behavior will reflect it whether or not your instruments show you a clear warning. Turbocharged engines complicate this picture in a way that trips people up. A turbocharger compresses incoming air back towards sea-level density, which allows the engine to maintain rated power at altitude, at least up to the critical altitude where the turbo can no longer keep up. If you've spent time flying turbocharged aircraft, be very careful before you assume that experience translates to a naturally aspirated airplane at elevation. The throttle feels the same. The results are not. Your propeller is suffering too. A propeller is a rotating wing. It generates thrust by pushing air backward. Thin air means less thrust for the same rotational speed. The tachometer tells you how fast the prop is spinning, not how much thrust it's making. In dense sea level air, maximum RPM makes maximum thrust. In thin summer air at altitude, maximum RPM makes less thrust than you're used to, and the difference can be significant. And then there are the wings. Here's something I wish more instructors spent time on with students. Your airplane stalls at a specific angle of attack, not a specific airspeed. But we express stall speeds in indicated airspeed, because indicated airspeed is tied to dynamic pressure, which is tied to air density. In thin air, the same indicated airspeed represents a faster true airspeed. That means at liftoff, your actual speed over the ground is higher than it was at your home sea-level airport. Your ground roll before achieving flying speed is longer. You're burning more runway. Once airborne, your climb rate takes a serious hit. A Cessna 172 might show a sea-level climb rate of around 700 feet per minute. At 8,000 feet density altitude, that can be cut by half or more down to 300 or 350 feet per minute under typical conditions. 350 feet per minute sounds like progress until you put terrain in front of it. At 350 feet per minute, gaining 600 feet takes over a minute and a half. If there's high ground 3 miles out and you need 400 feet of clearance, the math is tight. Add a passenger, luggage, a headwind that's slightly worse than forecast. An engine that's running just a touch rough, and tight becomes marginal. Marginal becomes dangerous. The Airman certification standards for private pilot require you to demonstrate an understanding of density altitude effects on performance. Your examiner will ask you how you determined the runway was adequate. Your answer needs to include actual numbers from the pilot's operating handbook for actual conditions, not a general sense that it looked like enough runway. Numbers from the book for the day. Here's something I want you to really sit with. Your previous experience at an airport is only valid if the conditions are similar. The flight you made to a Colorado airport in March tells you almost nothing about the flight you're planning in August. The conditions are different. The airplane's performance is different. You need to approach it as if you've never flown that departure before, because in the conditions that matter, you haven't. This is the trap that shows up over and over in accident reports. A pilot with genuine experience, real hours, an airplane they know well, flying a route they've done before. They skip the performance calculations because they feel like they already know the answer. And the answer this time is different from the answer last time, and they don't find out until they're committed to a runway that isn't long enough. Loading matters here too, and it compounds density altitude in ways that aren't always obvious. Your POH performance charts assume a specific weight. When you're heavier, you need more lift, more runway, more climb gradient. The afternoon mountain departure after a full day of flying with two people, luggage, and full fuel at high density altitude is a meaningfully harder problem than the one you visualized when you planned the trip the night before from sea level. Here's what I want you to do before any warm weather flight at elevation. And honestly, before any flight where the temperature deviates significantly from standard, even at lower elevation. Open the POH. Find the takeoff distance and obstacle clearance distance tables. These are usually presented as a function of pressure altitude and outside air temperature. Calculate your density altitude. Look up your numbers for today's conditions. Not from memory, not from the last time you flew there. Today, then look at your actual available runway, not the total declared runway length. The part that's available to you given your runway entry point, given where the numbers are, given the usable surface before the departure end. Add a margin. The handbook numbers represent controlled test conditions with a well-maintained airplane and a trained test pilot flying a precise technique. Real-world performance varies. Experienced mountain pilots routinely add 50% to book figures for hot summer high-altitude operations. If the book says you need 1,500 feet of ground roll, plan for 2,200. If you have the runway, great. If you don't, you have a decision to make. And you should be making it right now, not when you're already rolling. Also account for runway slope and surface. A runway with an upslope for your departure adds to your effective ground roll. A rough surface adds friction. A tailwind that's lighter than you wanted adds to ground speed at liftoff. All of these work against you, and they all stack. Humidity deserves a mention, even though it's hard to quantify. Moist air is actually less dense than dry air because water vapor molecules are lighter than the nitrogen and oxygen they displace. High humidity on a hot day adds to your effective density altitude, even if it doesn't show up clearly in a standard calculation. In practical terms, treat significant humidity as another reason to be conservative. If you're already thinking hard about the numbers, let the humidity tip you toward waiting. The early morning is your friend. Temperatures at a mountain airport after sunrise are often 10 to 20 degrees cooler than peak afternoon temperatures. A departure that was genuinely marginal at 2 in the afternoon might be entirely comfortable at 6 or 7 in the morning. Mountain pilots build this into their planning as second nature. They arrive somewhere the evening before. They depart before the heat builds. They don't fight the physics when the calendar says wait. You can build that habit now. You don't need to learn it the hard way.
Some practical tools. Most aviation apps calculate density altitude directly. You put in your field elevation, current altimeter setting, and temperature, and it gives you a number in seconds. Use it on every pre-flight in summer. It takes less time than checking the fuel sumps. When you're flying somewhere unfamiliar, talk to whoever's working at the airport. The line tech, the instructor, anyone who's been watching airplanes depart that runway in these conditions, local knowledge is real knowledge. They'll tell you about the afternoon thermal cycle. The slope you can't see from the numbers, the aircraft they've watched struggle. Ask. It costs nothing. And when the numbers genuinely don't work, say so. Make the no-go call, or the wait-until-morning call, from the ramp. That's where the call belongs. Not on the runway. Not at rotation. Not when the trees are in your windscreen and there's nothing left to do. The physics here are fixed. The air is what it is. Your airplane performs according to conditions you can calculate and predict. The information is in your handbook. The math takes 5 minutes. Run it. I pulled some of the performance references today from the Cessna Pilot's Operating Handbook and the Federal Aviation Administration's Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge. The FAA also publishes a safety briefing on density altitude specifically worth reading before summer. You can find more conversations like this one at radiohangar.com. Stay ahead of the numbers. I'll see you next time.